Technology is essential to running a nonprofit, but many nonprofit managers are nervous about making the right choices, or worse, aren't even sure what the issues are. In this talk from Craigslist Foundation, consultant John Kenyon alleviates the fear and outlines the tech topics you need to master in order to run a successful nonprofit from the Conversations Network's Social Innovation Channel.
Hi, this is Elena Connor.
And I'm Eric Nee. We are your hosts on Social Innovation Conversations. Welcome to the free podcast series of Craigslist Foundation's nonprofit boot camps, which are designed to help people help people. To learn more about Craigslist Foundation or the nonprofit boot camp conferences, visit www.craigslistfoundation.org. This series is funded by the Community Technology Foundation of California, which helps underserved communities secure social justice, access, and equality through the application of information and communications technologies.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And if you'd like us to produce new and even more exciting programs in the future, we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free.
And now, here's our presentation from the Craigslist Foundation.
I just thought I'd tell you a little bit about what I'm doing here and why I'm the guy who's up here talking to you. I've been helping nonprofits with technology for about 15 years. I started through CompuMentor, which some of you may know, and in fact I'm wearing a TechSoup t-shirt. This was from NetSquared, the event they had about the next generation of the internet and all that good stuff. And I started as an IT consultant, working with nonprofits around, just the basics about hardware and software and then databases. Along the way, I wrote a guide called the E-Nonprofit, which helps organizations understand the internet, and I'll show you that a little bit about that a little later. And then for the last couple of years, I was working at a place called groundspring.org, and some of you may know them. They have a donate now and an email now internet service. So anyway, I've been working a long time in these different places, and I also teach at the Masters of Nonprofit Administration course at the University of San Francisco, where I teach management information courses, and basically what every nonprofit manager needs to know about technology, because most of them are like you all, professionals and working through their degree program. So that's what I'm doing here. And if you were in the previous session, just like them, I'm totally love questions and I love to be interrupted, so don't be shy. I may ask somebody to reopen that back door just because I know the airflow with all the bodies in here can really up the temperature. But other than that, and I'll try not to get too close to the microphone because I know I'm projecting pretty naturally. All right, so here is our agenda. We're going to have an introduction. I'm going to talk about nonprofits and technology in kind of a general way. And then I'm going to talk to you about something called the Work Systems Framework. And this is a way of looking at work systems. Because, I know a lot of times people are looking at, what tools should I use and how can I pick things? And so this is going to be a way to give you a way to kind of orient yourself. We're going to talk about planning and budgeting, and I have what I call the 10 technology commandments. So I don't have tablets or anything, or I won't make fire appear, but oh yeah, I know, it'd be a lot more exciting. All this big buildup and no fire. What I really, though, want to focus on and what I'm going to spend some time on is resources. Because in an hour and a half, I can't empower you to know all the things you need to know in the next 2 to 10 years about technology. But I can point you to some resources that can help you and can give you a solid foundation. Things you can read and spend time with and explore as you have time. And then we'll have hopefully about 20 minutes for question and answer. So the first thing I'd like to do is see hands and get an idea of the size of organizations we're dealing with. So if you could raise your hand if you're in an organization with more than 30 people. Okay, good. About almost 10%. Yep. Volunteers, yep. Volunteers and staff. If your organization is between 10 and 30 people, please raise your hand. Okay, great. That's looked about 50. And so under 10 people. No, I mean, well, if they're working, yeah.
Do they contribute to the website and all this good stuff?
Okay, good. Well, then I'm sorry. I'll leave them out. Great. All right, and then that's helpful, because what I most of my work has been with small and medium-sized nonprofits, and I know that that's kind of, you know, the target audience here. So I'm going to be talking about a lot about what do you need to know, even if you're a small person, even if you're one person. If you're one person, you have my sympathies, but I'll focus on, you know, kind of the two people or so. And then the real question, and I want you to be very honest here, how many of you have, or your organizations, have a technology plan? One, keep them up, come on, be proud. One, two, good. I see you just getting nudged, and come on.
How specific does it have to be?
If it's in writing in more than two words, I'll give you that it's a plan. Okay, oh good, well, so we have almost four, okay. So the other 90% of you don't have a plan. And so it's often people come to me and say, you know, what database should I get? What technology should I use? It's the same question as what kind of house should I get? Well, do you want a one-room shack or do you want the Trump Tower? There's 1,000 houses in between there with millions of configurations. What do you need? That's where it's all got to start and end. What do you need? So that's going to be a theme I'm sure you'll notice throughout this. So when we talk about nonprofits and technology, these to me are the areas which you as nonprofit managers and thinkers need to know about. First, you need to know about systems analysis. Technology is only going to help you improve and speed up your business processes. If you have a bad business process, technology will help you do it poorly a lot faster. And that's not really efficient or effective. So what I want you to do is find the appropriate tools. And in order to do that, you have to understand, well, what is the system that I'm dealing with? What is the context? What is my competition? What are other people doing in this area? And how are they serving their customers? How are they getting their services out in cool ways and using the internet and engaging people? All that sort of stuff. All right, next is planning. And planning is up here. It's not down here, people. It's up here at the top. You know, you get what you plan for. So all of you with no technology plans, if you're making your technology to-do list, you think you all have number one already, is to make some sort of basic technology plan. And I'll talk to you about that. Then the other pieces, of course, are hardware and software. What about the computers, the printers, the scanners? Then what about the software? What are we going to use for email, databases? Not databases, because I try and keep that separate. Because as they talked about in the previous session, databases are vitally important. And you'll become tired of hearing me talk about data. Question?
When you say nonprofits and technology, are you mainly meaning computers and the internet, or are you meaning multimedia, cameras, video, audio?
Yep, I mean anything that's helping you provide products and services. Mainly for most people, it is about computers and the internet and things like that. But I certainly would consider other things. You know, the phone is a piece of technology. You know, it's you know, a hammer is a piece of technology. You know, in theory. So. Then after databases, then is the internet. We can't really be an effective nonprofit these days without understanding the internet. And then beyond just the internet, what about online services? There are a plethora of online services to help you advocate and email and donate and all these things. So it's important for you to understand about those. And then the future. As you know, technology isn't standing still. Technology changes every day and every month. So it's up to people like me and other consultants to keep up with that. Not necessarily your job, maybe not what you want to be focused on, is keeping track of the future. But it's always good an idea to lift your eyes from the road and look ahead and see what's coming. To understand, what are blogs and are they any use to me? Probably not, in fact. And what about RSS feeds? Well, they're great and they're slick and there's lots of hype about them, but how many of your users are going to actually benefit from them and use them? Again, it's all about appropriate technology. So, and just to give you an example of that, recently in my USF class had a fascinating discussion because one woman works with an ex-offenders program in Bayview Hunters Point. So these are people who are ex-offenders, they're in recovery, they are used to talking to people one-on-one. You know who you're talking to, you know what's going on. A lot of kind of mistrust with email and technology and things like that. They're used to that face-to-face interaction. So even though you might think every nonprofit needs email, they use it at a much different level, and they get their job done, and they get granted, they get funded, they do a great job. So it's the appropriate technology. So just because you hear about these great technologies, you've got to stop and think, what's appropriate for me? What's appropriate for my organization? That's why I'm going to keep coming back to what you need, because it all starts with your needs list. If you're wondering what database you should get or what tool you should buy, do not go to the vendors. The vendors are great, and they're there, and they'll give you information. But you've got to start with what do you need, just like with the house analogy. Do I need 4 bedrooms? Am I going to have a large family? You know, is my grandmother going to be living downstairs? Do I need an extra room for her? Do I want a swimming pool? Do I need, you know, 3 garages for all my Cadillacs? What do I need? So it's really important to think about what's appropriate. Question, thank you.
Well, if you don't go to the vendor for those kinds of questions, I've just even tried to figure out, well, I want a planning software. It's very difficult. I couldn't figure out, you know, where do you even go to get some kind of analysis of that?
Yeah, see, but you're talking about analysis of the tool.
Right.
Right, and I'm saying to these, most people haven't done any analysis of what do you need, you know, articulating your needs. Mm-hmm. Here are the top 3 things I want from my planning software. Here are the second 3 things. Because when you go out, you're not going to find a perfect match. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to find, oh, this one does number 1 and number 3 and number 5, but it doesn't really do, you know, 4 and 2, and I really kind of want those. And then this other solution does 2 and 4 great, but 1 and 5 are really weak. So see what I mean? You've got to have your needs down. If you go and talk to the vendors, they're going to tell you, oh, yeah, it'll do whatever you want it to.
Sure.
You know, right? I mean, they're going to be honest with you and tell you what it can and cannot do. But I'm just saying, don't start with the vendors. I totally get your point. Like, how do I understand what's out there, right, and what the things can do? But I'm saying, make that your secondary thing. Almost everybody goes to that first. You know, right? Don't we all like kind of go to the vendors and say, well, what do you got that I can use? Yeah, so that's what I want to stop. I want to stop your and interrupt your thinking, have you think differently, to steal Apple's phrase. All right, so I'm going to use this work systems framework just to introduce it to you. I'm not going to go into depth. You're not going to be quizzed. I'm not going to ask you for any, great explanations. But understand that the outside of this triangle is the context. Like I said, who is the competition for your nonprofit? If you're a small nonprofit or you're just thinking of starting a nonprofit, I would encourage you to spend at least 20 or 30 hours researching who is already doing this, who has done it before, how do they do it, and go and talk to those people. I see so many nonprofits come into business and go out of business because they didn't do that step. They didn't realize, oh gee, there's 3 other programs in the US just like mine. I thought it was an original idea and maybe I have an original spin on it. But believe me, you're going to save yourself so much time and energy by finding out what other nonprofits have already done, especially in technology. The advice of a friend who already, or a colleague who's already done with those planning software, once you know what you need, then you can go say, what did you need? And what tool did you find that fitted well? And what didn't it do for you? What were its weaknesses?
Question. When you say searching for other nonprofits that done what you've done, are you talking about how they set themselves up, or that they serve peanuts to the homeless in a small county in Afghanistan?
Great. Both. Okay. If you can find somebody who does what you do, who feeds the homeless or something, great. Find out what technology they use. Or if you're looking for planning, a planning piece of software, talk to any organization you can. You know, it may not matter what they do, just to get their feedback. What was it like? What was it like to set up? What's the support like? Because, I mean, I'm not going to go into vendors much, but every time you talk to a vendor, as soon as you hang up from the salesman, I say, call customer service. How long did you wait? Did they answer the phone? What kinds of questions do they usually ask? Get real. Get real about what your support's going to be. So that's my tip, my offline tips. Anyway, it's important to understand this context. Who is your competition? Who else is out there doing it? And how are they delivering services? And then you have to make sure that you have all of these, you're considering all these pieces. Now, this uses business terms, so please insert your nonprofit, you know, term here. You know, customers or stakeholders, the people who you're delivering services to. It's important that you're providing products and services that match the needs of the customers. So this arrow means there needs to be a balance here between what they want and what you're providing. And so in order to support and provide those products and services, what do you need? Business processes. You need good business processes that are going to allow you to create these products and services in an effective and efficient way. And so what do those business processes rely on? They rely on the participants, the information, and the technology. So you need to have your technology that supports the business processes. I need to send email to let my customers know that, you know, we're having this big fundraiser, or, you know, we're going to have a big cultural event coming up. So I need the technology, I need the information about the event, and then I need the staff to create the email, send the email out, use the technology, and work with all these things. So these, are, to me, are the essential elements and what you should be looking at when you're thinking about your work systems. I don't, like I said, even if you're very small, if you're one or two people, I think it's important that you understand all these pieces and that they all need to kind of be in balance. And if you're weak someplace, know that that's where you need to kind of strengthen. And for each one of these pieces, there's a principle. It's important that you please the customer, please the stakeholder, give your people what you want. You know, that's what some of the really cool thing is about these internet tools. It used to be that you'd send out a direct mail piece and, you know, within 6 months, you'd know if it raised the money you wanted or not. But with the internet, I can send out an email, and usually within 72 hours, I know what people clicked on, what they responded to. So if you're an environmental organization, you send out an email about bears and salmon and eagles, and everyone that you sent it to clicks on the bear link and not many people on the salmon, you know that your stakeholders like bears. So what does that mean? You need to provide more information about bears. What services can you provide? Can you send them on a trip to see the bears? Or can you provide them photographs of the bears? What can you do to provide that for them? Business processes, performing the work efficiently. You know, again, technology is just going to speed up your inefficient processes. So it's really important to get good processes. It's hard to stop what you're doing and say, what is our process? You know, it's not that exciting or sexy, but it is so vital to get your efficiency up. If you don't know how a piece of information travels through, I do this exercise with my USF students, and we're too many here to do it, but I clear out all the tables and have them all stand in the back, and then I play a march, and they all march across the room, and that's how orderly data would move through an organization. From data entry, through accounting, through fundraising. Then I give them each a different card with a different symbol. You know, you've got a circle, you've got a square, you've got a triangle, and now you all start in the same place, and now do what your card says. And they all run around and smash into each other. That's what happens when data is not organized in an organization, and that's what happens in a lot of your organizations. So that's why it's really important to say, okay, where does data come in from? How do we get it? What do we do with it when we got it? How do we manage it? And then what do we do to produce our outputs or the customer reports or whatever it is? Participants, make sure you're serving the participants, that your staff have what they need, that you're creating value from information. Again, back to my picking on the bears. You know, if you find out that all your participants love bears, well, then what value can you create from that information? My stakeholders are interested in bears. I bet if I put up more web pages about bears and do a special event about bears, I'll get a lot of response. Because each one of you has a unique set of stakeholders. And each one of you have a group of people that have share your values and want certain things. And so it's kind of up to you to figure out, you know, what are those things and how can I provide them? Technology, you want to minimize the effort consumed by technology. If you've got these three fancy pieces of technology and it's taking you, you know, 2 hours to do a relatively simple thing, then again, it's a good idea to look at your processes. And this can be true for, you know, whether you're dealing with a large organization or very small, discrete process. What is the right tool? Infrastructure, make sure you understand that your infrastructure is a genuine resource. And that, you know, the technology isn't just there because, you know, you need it and it helps, but it can really be a resource. That's really valuable information you're getting from those email campaigns that all those people like bears. There's real value in that. And so that technology is providing you with a real resource of information. And then context, to make sure you minimize unintended conflicts and risks, either among departments or around information. And also, like I say, with your competitors, your competition, things like that. And so in the largest picture, what I try and say is it's important to balance these three. And each one of us, I bet, can recognize that we focus on one of these, right? Some people focus on results, right? Some people are much more focused on people. They want to make sure that everyone's happy. A lot of other people, they're focused on results, want to see what gets done. But your best results are when you have a balance here, when you balance the process and the results and the people, and that you've got all of these pieces kind of working together.
Question?
Yes, thank you.
Can that be fluid? Can it be that instead of being a third, a third, a third, that for a while it might be 90-10-10, 5-5? And then could shift?
I would say that then the other elements will suffer. So to me, the ideal, as in life, is a balance, and that it's not always achievable, just like work-life balance kind of thing. Good question, thanks. All right, so, and also to understand your users and your audience, especially in the internet age, your demographic area that you can reach has just exploded to worldwide, potentially. And understand how you have concentric circles of customers. And this is in the book that I'm going to recommend called ManagingNonprofits.org, so you'll be able to read up more about this. But, you know, you've got your board and your staff and your major donors, then you've got your members and your interested prospects, and then the general public. So it's important to think about how can I match my product delivery to each of these audiences, whether it's, you know, how can I use the internet to communicate with the board or communicate with the staff through an intranet, and maybe I communicate with my major donors, maybe I give them an internal email address so they feel really close to the organization. And then, you know, my members get the regular email, and for interested prospects in the general public, I've got a good website that provides a good amount of information and ways to contact me. So, you know, just making sure you've got those appropriate technologies. So now I'm going to talk about planning, and we're going to talk about these things: roles, elements, steps, goals, time frame, and budget. First, even if you're a really small organization, it's important to make sure that you try and have these kind of members of a planning team. Maybe it's you and a board member and a consultant. That's great, because you just want to make sure that you have these different perspectives. What is the organizational perspective? What is the overall budget? Where are we trying to go? What is our mission and vision in general? And then kind of a consultant function where you have that outside technology and that expert perspective. Because as I said, I don't think it's a good idea for you as nonprofit managers, unless you're in technology, to keep up on all this stuff. It can, you know, you've got enough stuff to deal with on your own plate. So bring somebody in when appropriate who keeps up with these things. Don't try and do it yourself and say, oh, well, I'm sure I can figure it out. You're probably going to spend, you know, 10 times longer if you don't get the right thing than you would if you just spent some time with somebody whose job it is to keep up with those things. On the organizational stakeholder function, the process and people perspective, what do your stakeholders want? It's great if you can bring in a volunteer, bring in, you know, somebody who's a user of your services. And then the end user function, the results, the user perspective. You know, who is the end user of your services and what is their perspective on things? Then when you're making a plan, you want to make sure you have these key elements. You want to have that organizational profile. And like I said before, that's kind of the context. Who's your competition? What's going on? What are other organizations doing that I can you know, mimic or use? Having a technology vision statement. You know, what is the vision for you for technology that you want it to help your organization? That you want it to be integrated in your organization and you want to do regular planning, things like that, you know, at a minimum. And then just the project, to have a description, you know, what is the project, what are the benefits of the project? Always great to start with one of the what are the benefits, what are the tasks, what are the costs, and then, of course, you're going to have to, you know, create some kind of formal budget. And then, of course, a timeline, a critical path. And for some people, benchmarks are also really helpful. So you don't necessarily have goals that you have to meet, but just benchmarks that say, you know, are we on track or not? And so I give you these key steps in planning about, you know, assessing your current technology and your organizational readiness. You know, do you have the staff? Do you have the time? Do you have the budget? Have you realistically made a plan so you understand what's needed? Creating the team, as I talked about before, having that planning team and considering consulting support. If you can, being able to state the vision and develop criteria and set goals. So, for example, our vision is that we communicate across all mediums with our stakeholders. So that's going to mean we still do email, we may do phone calls, we're going to use the internet, all of those things are going to be included. And what's the criteria? Well, we want to make sure that everyone's reached in some form. So that's going to be one of our criteria. And then what are our goals? That, you know, we reach 90% of the people that we're trying to reach with our message. And then maybe there are specific goals, like, you know, of the 10,000 people on our email list, we want 3,000 at least to click on this link or something, which is a very ambitious goal, by the way, so don't take that as something that's kind of normal. Create the components of the plan, have your priorities. Just like I was talking about before with defining your needs, it's really great if you can say, these are our top three essential priorities, you know, kind of class A. Then have a second tier of, these are our second kind of three top priorities. Because as I said, when you go and you look at these products, you're not going to find an exact match. So it's going to be really helpful for you to know, oh no, that was one of my A priorities. I can't do without that. Maybe you don't have one or two of the Bs, and that's okay. But that's why it's important to know what you've got. Share and explain the plan. Let other people know what you're trying to do. Let the staff help. Communicate. Make sure that you're communicating around that. This is all about technology. I mean, all about information and communicating information internally, externally, all of that. And so you can get feedback. People, your staff members can have great ideas. They don't need to know the technological complexities. Make a decision, develop a budget and a timeline, then implement the plan, and make sure that you also have time for this training staff, because you know training, as we know, is often something that can get overlooked and can have a really negative impact when it comes to technology, because you really need people to know how to use those tools that you're giving. And then the evaluation. And I think, to me, it's important to evaluate all four of these pieces. First, evaluate the technology. Well, was that the right email tool? Does it do all the things that we needed it to do? Then how about the implementation? How did that go? Was it easy? Did we train people so when they moved to the new system, they were ready to go and up and running? Or did everyone kind of stumble and shut down for a couple days because they didn't really know how to use it and you know the support phone was overwhelmed? Then the process. Did we go through this process well, and what happened? And our planning. Was our planning on time? Were we accurate? What about kind of our budget and timelines and things like that? And then it allows you, once you've done this evaluation, it allows you to revise plans and make better plans next time. So just to give you a project example, that the vision for this project, that all computers are networked to share information. So, and then you've got to spell out the plan. Well, we've got to select and purchase the things. We've got to select not only the cards, but the cables and the hub. We have to establish security and access levels. Who's going to be given access to whose computer and whose hard drive? We got to configure and test them, test the network, and train staff on how to use the network. What do they do now? You know, do they go over to the other person's computer? Because I think that's a great point. It's important to know where people are now so you can take them to the place you want them to be based on the skills that they have. And then to go to the budget. You know, for each one of those, what is the dollars going to be or what are the hours going to be? Oftentimes, some of these projects, a lot of the project is staff time. I really encourage you to try and put a monetary amount on that staff time, because so often it gets undervalued, and then it's not realistic how much resources you're using. And it can really open your eyes if you say, well, this person's salary is X amount, and so translated, that's how much an hour, and so this is how much it's going to cost for that person to spend these hours on that. And then just that timeline to figure out, okay, well, it's going to, you know, take some time to select and purchase these things, some time to install, some time to configure, and then some time to get people up and running. And so to try and be realistic. Because, you know, so many times I see, you know, all of these in 1 month. You know, and it's just not realistic. Unless you're going to have everyone in your organization stop what they're doing and just focus on this technology transition, which is usually not very realistic. So, then let's talk about assessing project risk, because that's always a good thing to know, how risky is this thing we're about to do, because there's some little risk in almost every technology project. And so I'm not going to go all through this grid because I just want you to have it as a reference. But, you know, for example, if you've got a small project with a well-defined structure where, you know, we need to purchase and install a new email program, we're going to use, you know, Microsoft Office and Outlook, heaven forbid, and we're going to use proven known technology, then the risk is probably pretty low. However, if this is a very large project and you have not, you don't have a well-defined structure, you know, we just want to, you know, do online fundraising and, you know, we're not sure what that means and we're going to use all these new hot blogging tools and RSS and all this stuff and, you know, what's your risk? You know, it's going to be a lot higher than down here. So just something to be aware of. And in connection with that, there's something called the doability grid. Which can help you sometimes think about decisions. You know, what's going to be the benefit? You know, what is the value of this project? What are we really going to get into it? And is that high or low? And then when we look at the risk that we just saw from the previous one, so where does that kind of put us? You know, it's you know, low risk, but it's high benefit. Well, then you definitely want to go for it. But if it's high risk and low benefit, you may want to forget it. So just to, you know, when you're thinking about these things, to look at this as a frame and say, where am I in this, so that you know what you're getting into. So then budgeting. Adjusting the outlook and facing technological and economic realities. So Let's get real. Welcome to Reality Check, where you sit your ass down and we give you the reality, which is that, you know, like we know, buying a computer is not like buying a chair. You don't buy it and use it and it's there and you don't have to do anything with it. Not like that at all. A much better analogy is the car, where we've got to, you know, put gas in it all the time. Every 3,000 miles, we're going to have to change the oil. We can count on, you know, every couple years probably having to have, you know, some kind of major work done. We're going to have to, you know, pay a regular fee for insurance and things like that. In order to get the best out of your technology, that's how it's going to be. It's going to be need to be maintained. And how many of you have ever heard of the 70-30 rule? Great. And there's a 20-80 rule and there's a 60-40 rule. They're all kind of the same, which says that when you buy a piece of technology, it's usually the cost is usually about 30% is your software cost. The other 70% are all the human or wetware costs, they call them. Training, maintenance, support, configuration, selection. So if you think that you're going to go buy this $5,000 piece of software, be aware that that's only 30% of your costs. There's a whole other 70%. You can ignore that if you want to, but it's going to be a reality, and you're going to be spending that money on the support and the maintenance. A great colleague that I had when I explained that car analogy about, you know, it's like car maintenance, they said, yeah, but, you know, they never upgrade the road so you can't drive on it. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess they do kind of do that. They upgrade Windows, and you can't use your old software and things like that. So, but it's just important to know that, you know, computers wear out. They only have a 3 or 4 year lifespan, you know, so it's going to be important to allocate and understand that and budget for that. So that kind of preventive budgeting, understanding that, okay, this is going to cost $3,000 for this computer. I can spread that over 3 years. However, I need to budget for a computer support person or a consultant. Somebody's going to have to be there to set it up and configure it. I've dealt with a lot of small clients, and almost all of them, it began with, oh, come in and help us when we have an emergency. And every 6 months, they'd be paying me, you know, $5,000 in consulting fees to come in and say, wow, your hard drive died, and you didn't do your backup, you're screwed, you know, or for them to go and spend, and I don't know if you know this, but if your hard drive dies and you don't have a backup, it can cost you $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 to recover the data on that hard drive. And then it may not be all come out. It may come out as garbage, but you still got to pay the fee because you wanted them to do the hard drive. So, yeah, so just it's a lot better budget-wise to allocate money on a regular basis and to have somebody come in and maintain your systems, even if it's every quarter, even if it's every 6 months, something like that. But it's really important to understand that maintenance and to allocate that money annually for, like I said, splitting it up across years for hardware, same for software, making sure you include training of some sort, even if it's internally generated. But make sure you know that the supervisor needs to spend the hours training the person they supervise. And you need to have trained that supervisor so they can train other people. Just because that you manage somebody doesn't make you a good trainer, you know, especially around technology. So that person really you need to make sure that manager is comfortable with the technology so they can explain it. And other people, you know, people have a lot of fear around technology. And so how do you counter that fear? Well, with knowledge and with understanding and acceptance. And if they see their peers or their manager comfortable in using the technology, that's a big boost. So, you know, as technology advocates, I'm always telling my students, I need you to be excited. You know, when you're giving a presentation, I need you to get people excited about it because people are often trepidatious about technology, understandably. And tech support, like I said, you've got, you know, like 70%, most people say, of your costs are in these other areas of support and maintenance. And then also understand not only just determining your costs, but think about value. Oftentimes, especially if they're helping you improve your process, these tools and technology can really bring you some value. And they can also, you have to also understand that if you've got bad technology, there's also costs. You know, you've got lost productivity while someone's, you know, waiting for their computer to be fixed, or their email doesn't work, or the internet is down again, or the database is screwed up for the 100th time. You know, they're not feeding the homeless when they're sitting there drumming their fingers or talking to their friend because they've got nothing else to do because the technology doesn't work. And also the benefits and morale. You know, especially if you're hiring, you know, young people and getting them to work, they have expectations about technology and how it works. And if you're giving them, you know, these five-year-old computers with, you know, Word Perfect on them, you're not going to really encourage these people to stay around. And, you know, because they're not building their resume, they're not building their tech skills, any of that stuff. And oftentimes, though, those people can be a great fount of, you know, willingness to try new things and energy. And I want to tell you, I've just recently started working with a wonderful religious order of sisters over in Belmont. And what's great about them is that they're not afraid to try. You know, they're mostly women that are over 50. A lot of them are former school teachers. They are not tech savvy by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not afraid to try. They kind of have their kind of eye on the prize to kind of, you know, overuse that. But they know where they want to get. They know they want to help people. They know they want to get better and have a better website. So they've got that willingness to try. So I want you to have that too and be willing to try and understand it can have great benefits. It's not always perfect, but, you know, what is. So just to review the planning, defining your business models and goals, knowing who's going to do these different roles of, you know, big picture, little picture, having the key elements, the key steps, the project goals, thinking about using consultants and other experts, and then preventative budgeting. Then I just want to talk for a few minutes about data security, backups, restores, and privacy policies. First of all, data security. You know, most organizations, when you go in to do an audit of their data security, 90% of the violations have nothing to do with the database or the computer. Most of the violations are you've got your password stuck to your monitor. Or you in accounting, you threw everyone's pay stubs in the trash and I just picked them out and now I know what everyone makes. You know, most of that technology and that privacy and the security is physical. So it's important to think about that. But it's also very important to think about that in terms of your database. Do any of you work with health organizations or hold information about youth and health? HIPAA. Right? HIPAA is a big thing, that Privacy Act. You cannot have that information publicly. I also work with a mental health agency over in the peninsula. Well, they just can't, you know, take one of their members and put their page up on, you know, picture up on a billboard. There's all these, you know, laws about privacy and things like that. However, when they went and talked to those people and said, in order to improve our website, we'd really like to tell stories about how our agency has affected and improved your life. Two or three of them, you couldn't stop them. They were like, I used to live in this horrible group home and I hardly had any friends and I hardly did anything. Now I got my own house, I'm taking guitar lessons, I have a part-time job, I am so happy. Well, that is such a powerful story for fundraising, for your website, for all sorts of things. Just that, you know, even if you're in working agencies where that information is kind of sensitive, understand that there's a way to use that as well. And then I want to lump backups and restores. First of all, I'll say, you know, if you're not doing a backup, do a backup. If you have a backup, try and make it better. Make sure that you've got a backup, not just in your building, but off-site, and then it moves off-site. Like every week, someone takes a backup home, because what if your building burns down or is destroyed by an earthquake or flooded? You know, it's happened to lots of organizations in Katrina and Rita. And then what goes with this is restore. If you have a backup and you've never restored it, how do you know it works? How do you know you're backing up the right stuff? So if any of you have a backup and you haven't restored it, please put that on your list for next week to go and restore it. If you're setting up a backup system, make sure that's part of the plan. We're going to set it all up, we're going to run it for a couple weeks, and then we're going to try and do a restore. So for example, if I'm backing up your hard drive and I want to be able to take that backup and go to a brand new empty computer and put all your files on and make sure they all come back and that I can read them all and they don't get, you know, corrupted or anything like that. Or gee, I forgot to put in that backup software that I should backup things, you know, since March of last year, because I put that as the date by accident in the backup software, so nothing's been backed up. I mean, I can't tell you, there's unfortunately been too many of my of clients or people that have called me in an emergency situations like that. It's like, well, when was the last time you tested your backup? Never, and now it's too late.
I have a question. When you tell us to take it home, take it off-site every 2 weeks, does that mean
not necessarily, sure. It depends on the size of your data. So for example, if your database or your Excel programs or whatever you use to maintain your data would fit on a CD, great, burn a CD every week and bring that home. So just have something that's physically offsite. Yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend trying to move it onto your computer. And then privacy policies. As soon as you ask me for my information as a donor or as a volunteer or anything, I want to know your privacy policy. If you don't have a privacy policy, that's the next thing to put down on your list after your database and your backup and your restoration. Privacy policy. Go to groundspring.org, place I used to work, and they have a great privacy policy. I think it's in orange right on the homepage. They deal with a lot of credit card information and email. So they have a really thorough privacy policy. Dig through it. Steal the stuff that you want or that's going to make sense for you and your stakeholders. Then please get it reviewed by a lawyer, because what works for another organization may not work for you. But 90% of it probably will. It'll probably be fine. But I would hate to see you have, you know, any liability issues or something like that. But when I go online to donate, for example, because I'm an online donor and I talk a lot to people about online fundraising, the two things I want to know is your financial information. So if you don't have your financial information up there, I wonder what you're hiding. Because you may know that there's a real crisis in confidence in nonprofits in America today. I mean, do you know that only 20% of people think that nonprofits do a good job with the money they give? 20% of people think that nonprofits do a good job with the money they have. So how do you counteract that? By being as transparent as possible about your finances. When I go to your website or when I come into your office, when I pick up your materials, whatever, I want to see that information about your finances. And I also want to look for your privacy policy and know what you're going to do with my data. Because I'm trusting you to keep my data. And unfortunately, as a nonprofit consultant, I know that a lot of nonprofits don't do a good job at securing my data. You know, too often there's computers with no passwords, computers left on all the time, the cleaning people could have all the data that they wanted to, you know, things like that. All right, so now I'm going to do my Moses thing where I'm going to give you the 10 nonprofit technology commandments. A lot of these things I've already talked about, though, so they'll just be rehash and a reiteration. I would argue that after people, data is your most important resource. If I come into your office and take away your computer, how much work are you going to get done? So that makes me mention a pet peeve, which is I believe that every grant and every foundation should only give grants that have a technology piece in it. Because how is anyone doing anything these days without a computer? And why is there not a technology piece in every grant? So I would encourage you, as people who put grants in, to include a technology piece and say, hey, I'd just like to wake you up, foundation, and say that I can't do this without technology, and try and get that message through. One or two of the funders are getting a little better in understanding that, but... So I'd say that's your most important resource. So if that's true, is that your second highest item after people? Because usually people are your highest cost, right? Your salaries and things like that. Good. Your results depend on your investment in data. So again, if the money that you put in technology is going to be what you get out of it, if it's the last item or if it's an afterthought on your budget or in your planning, well, that's how much you're going to get out of the technology. It could end up being kind of an albatross around your neck if you're not paying attention to it. I know an organization that was using Razor's Edge, you know, the Cadillac of fundraising databases. They didn't renew their license for 2 years. So 2 years later, they were like, well, you can either pay us $120,000 to renew the licenses for each year and to renew the support contracts for each year, or you can go to another database. So just that, you know, they could have spent $10,000 in keeping that stuff up. But by not doing it, they ended up having to, you know, either do all those costs, they ended up going to another system, because who wants to do that? Define and know your data needs and uses. So just to the point that you just made, Adam, know what you need. What exactly are your data needs and how are you going to use them? Don't just, like he says, don't just go out and collect all this data and, oh, I'm sure we'll use this at some point, because that's just not effective and efficient. So understand, what do I need? Going back to that work systems framework, what do I need to create those products and services to serve my stakeholders? Seek out data and keep it flowing. Data is not just going to, you know, necessarily come to you, especially when it comes to that stakeholder data. Like my example about the eagles and the bears and the salmon. If I didn't send out an email with an eagle, bear, and salmon link, I would never be able to tell who clicked on what. If I only send out emails about salmon and wonder why no one clicks on them, then I'm not going to be able to figure that out. So it's important to try and think of different ways. How can I get this information out of my stakeholders? Because it's one thing to sit around in a focus group or something like that, and sometimes people tell you what they think you want to hear and stuff like that. And so it's much better if you can get this real data based on what people really do. How many people really showed up at your fundraiser? How many people really showed up at your protest? Things like that. What are those real things that I'm doing? And how can I find out about that data and make sure that I continue to pull data in? Because like I said, it's not just going to come to you. It's important that you go and find it and seek it out. Define your needs in detail before tool selection. So this is what I was saying earlier. If you already have tools, then regularly review because new tools are coming out all the time. But most important is to define your needs in detail. Like I said, top three needs, second three needs, next three needs, what are they? Try and be as specific as possible. Because especially if you're going out to look at those online databases, I work with them. I look at them all the time. They are so confusing, I can't begin to explain it to you. And the pricing structures, I mean, they've given a new meaning to the word Byzantine when it comes to those pricing structures. I mean, I defy any of you to like go to, I love GetActive, I love Kintera, I love them all, but go to their site and try and find a price. Good luck. Because they want to sit down and find out, oh, well, how much money do you have? And what are all the things, here are all the cool things we can get you to do. Aren't you excited? And don't you want to spend a lot of money now with us? So, good for them. But however, that's why it's so important to have your needs defined. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting money, you're wasting resources. And if I'm a donor and I'm giving you money, if I see that you're doing that and I see you're wasting resources, I see people using some of these online systems. Oh yeah, this online registration system was great. And then I dig into the pricing and see that almost 10% of every donation or whatever is going to that service. Well, I'm not paying for the service to make money. I wanted the money to go to the nonprofit, for example. So it's really important to know what your needs and your goals are before you select those tools and when you're looking at those tools. Yes?
Yeah. In our organization, we get federally funds, and they give us their own database that they want us to feed back information about the program and clients and all that kind of stuff. And we have a variety. We get funds from different federal agencies who have different database requirements. And then we have our own internal database, and trying to get those different systems to talk to each other or keep them completely separated from each other for somebody who doesn't know what you're talking about is a very difficult situation.
Yep. I can imagine. Yeah, you definitely have my sympathy. And so that to me is a great example of sitting down for a week, not that you have a week to do this, but sitting down for a week and figuring out that business process. What are all these reports that I get? What are the pieces of data? Where do they need to go? How can I make this the most efficient way? You may find out that you could get somebody to write a program that would automatically take 80% of that and do it. It's not going to be perfect, and there's no magical answers or things like that, but...
Is there a catalog of available database management software, and how do you decide if you buy something canned or if you have tinker with it or if you get it designed?
Okay, two gigantic questions that I cannot answer right. I mean, I'll give you the briefest answer I can, but... So the first part was, is there a catalog of database software, let's say? NPower, which I'll talk to you about, which will be on the resource page, has a guide of online databases. And there's npower.org, so npower.org. The other place is Idealware. Is that what you're going to say?
I just read a review that they reviewed a bunch of database systems. Mm. And 10 of them.
Exactly, yeah. Idealware.org. They have some great reports on email software, database software, things like that. So again, once you've defined your needs, then you can go there. I also recommend that you go to, TechSoup, that's on my back here, because they have a lot of people who, talk about databases and database planning and figuring out what works. They also have community bulletin boards, so you can talk to people about what they're experiencing. And then the second part was build or buy. Should you buy a database or build a database? So the very short answer to that very complex question is most of the time you should buy, because so much work has already gone into those systems. If you have 10 programmers standing by with nothing else to do and you can pay their $200,000 a year salaries for the next 12 years, great. Go for it. If you don't have those resources, though, for most people, it's going to be better to buy something that mostly fits their needs. And again, there's no magic bullet, so rarely are you going to find one piece of software that's going to meet your 12 needs. You're going to have this big piece of offline software that meets the first six, and then I need this offline email thing for the next three, and then I need this online donation thing for the other two, and then I'm going to put all those pieces together. Most nonprofits work like that, unless you can afford the gigantic big system like GetActive or Kintera that combines all those things. They combine all those things, but it's, you know, $50,000 for your basic website, thousands of dollars to set up, and then, you know, at least hundreds of dollars a month. So not really in the budget range of most organizations here, I think. Good questions. Thank you. The second five tech commandments. Honestly look at your information systems. So, you know, just like you were giving us this example about all these different reports and databases coming in, it's important to look at that system. What human resources do I have? Is everyone in my organization kind of tech phobic? Does anyone like technology in my organization? You know, even if they're not in a management position, they can be a great source of inspiration and excitement around technology and helping people get over the fear. Do I need to bring in a consultant that sits down and talks to us all about the options so we understand like what the options are, because I think you're right, that's a good idea, and then can use that to inform our planning and our listing of our needs. So, because those systems can be human, they can be data, they can be communication, there's all those different elements. So understand that an information system isn't just used by itself. You know, like you said about data entry, somebody's got to enter the data, somebody's got to format the Excel sheet, somebody's got to put it, you know, in, and make formulas work, all that stuff. There's that human element. So are you training that human element? Does that human have the skills and the support they need? Maintain the commitment of the board and staff to technology. So, most of you said you don't have a technology plan. Well, that's a great way to get it started, to let everyone understand we need a technology plan, otherwise we're probably wasting a lot of money and we're not focusing our efforts. We're just kind of doing the scattershot thing. We don't have, you know, a plan and a road we're going down. And to make sure that the board understands and supports that. I mean, I work with a lot of boards, and unfortunately, you know, many of them are still people who are, you know, the pre-boomers who were, you know, born before the baby boom and who aren't necessarily embracing technology. And I want you to know that in my USF class this semester, someone who I will not name, from a foundation I will not name in Marin, they were still using ledgers. I'm talking leather-bound paper ledgers. So for every check that came in, there was like 10 steps that had to be gone through because you had to turn this page and go to here and record it over here and do this. I mean, I personally was infuriated. I mean, I you know, she was okay, but I'm like, what nonprofit could get away with that? You know, what nonprofit would get funded if they were using ledgers and not some basic accounting system even? You know, the foundation could get away with that, but anyway. Yeah, I won't rant about that much. So have an ongoing conversation about data. Just like it's that chair analogy. It doesn't just sit there and is done. Data changes all the time, and every time you change what you want your organization to do or the impact you want to have, that's probably going to have an impact on your data. How are you going to use it? What data do you need to collect? All those things. So make sure that that's, you know, an ongoing conversation. That's why it's great, if you can, to have a data manager, a database manager, somebody who part of their job is written into their job description that they are responsible for the data in the organization. Getting back to this point about, you know, Excel, you know, that aren't well formatted, or data that's not well put in. You need to have somebody who's part mom and part cop. There's never going to be one product that's good forever. You know, if you're a small organization, you're just getting started, Excel's going to be fine for the first 100 people. Then maybe you want to look at eTapestry, which is, I think, free for under 500 people. And so that's an online database. So maybe you go to eTapestry for that 100 to 500 period of growth. Then, you know, you get your story in Time Magazine and you're about to hit the big time, so then you want to go to GetActive or Kintera, or, you know, maybe you want to go to the Rolls Royce of Razor's Edge, something like that. But at each decision point, you've said, these are my needs for the next 5 years, the best that I can guess. And then looking at my needs, here are the tools that are available and what's the best match. And that's a great question, because what is expandable? What's going to continue to work with me? But it's not like marriage. I mean, well, 50% of marriages end in divorce, so maybe that's not the best analogy, but it's not like you're going to marry that database forever. I'm telling people all the time, if you don't like your database, chuck it, get rid of it, show at the door, start dating another database, find a database that you like, that likes, you know, that you get along with, all that sort of stuff. So. That's right, because almost all systems will allow you to export the data in a common format like CSV, comma separated values is one that almost every other database can read or can import in some way. Sometimes you may need technical help as you get bigger. And also, caveat, if you have customized your database, like you got eBase or you got something else and you made all these customizations, you're going to have to recustomize your next new tool, and it's not all the data is not going to flow out and flow in. You're going to have to reconfigure that new tool. So, but that's normal. That's just part of what happens. Other question? Yes, yes.
When you mentioned going from Excel to eTapestry to get active or Kintara, is that when your organization grows?
And your needs change.
Yeah.
So it's, again, all back to what you need. You can't tie it to the staff numbers. You can't tie it to donor numbers, you know, because maybe you need an advocacy function, so you need Democracy in Action, which is another service. But, you know, again, that's why you can't go to the vendors and say, what do I need? You've got to have your needs. Yeah, you know what would be really cool for me to see as somebody who lives in the Bay Area and for any of you who are based in the Bay Area, a fundraising campaign around technology. Help us replace our computers. Help us upgrade our database. I would so get that and I would so donate to your organization because I've just never seen that as a fundraising campaign. But it's so essential. It makes sense. So, do you have comments?
If you're starting off and you just bootstrap, I've got a Mac.
Okay.
And I've got some of the iMac stuff that's available.
Great.
Stuff and everything else. How far could that take me? I don't get a clear idea that that'll handle up to, 200 donors, 5,000 donors? I'm not sure. I don't get a clean answer from them.
Right.
And how do I know what is going overboard in my customization and really making it more complex than I need to? Is that where I have to bring in a consultant?
All right. So what's the answer to that? The needs. The needs, the plan, because, again, you can't tie it to how many donors. You could keep 10,000 donors in Excel if you wanted to, if you wanted to be able to print it out and have the, you know, columns go for miles and miles about last gift, most recent gift, next gift. I mean, oh, talk about unwieldy. So, you know, that's why I said, you know, for under 100 donors, Excel may be okay. But as soon as you start reaching that, again, it's all about what information do you really need from those people? Do you just need their demographic information, or do you need to know, here are our 10 areas you know, that we work in Sri Lanka and Japan and China, and, you know, which one of these areas are you interested in? Are you going to keep all that data? So what kind of tools do you need to keep that data? What is your goal? What are you going to do with the data? Or do you just need to report it to the government, or are you going to actually do fundraising campaigns? Because I don't know if any of you have heard of diaspora fundraising. That was kind of a new term that a development person told me about. But people, for example, who are of Mexican descent and live in the United States send money back to Mexico. Happens all the time. So fundraising for organizations in Mexico, here in America, for people, you know, support the organizations back home, things like that. If that's a different set of data that you'll need. So, great. Keep in touch with other organizations. Like I said in the beginning, this is one of your best sources of information. Nobody's going to tell you the truth like your colleagues here in this room. Anybody you've networked with and you've gotten their card today, other people you know, call up people that are in your professional association, if you're in N10 or AFP or any of those things. Find out what they do and keep in touch with them on a regular basis. You know, go to your conferences and things like that and ask people, well, what tool do you use? You know, I want this planning software. Have you used any planning software or something like that? Like I said, knowledge eases fear, and there's a lot of unknowns. I mean, I'm getting told about all these, you know, cool and different new technologies all the time, and it can be a challenge. But it's good to kind of stay in the know, you know, just regular, really kind of broad websites, even like Wired.com or things like that, that talk about really broad, you know, tech trends and things like that. Great idea to know about. So my wrap up before questions. Excuse me, and before resources. Business processes are the key when it comes to technology. Technology is just going to speed up, hopefully, and make more effective your business processes. So if your process is bad, you're just going to get faster, badder. Or something like that. Batter faster? Yeah, that doesn't work either. Okay. Appropriate technology. Your technology needs to meet your needs very first, and then it has to meet the culture of your organization. If, you know, I couldn't go into that organization with all those nuns, even though they're really, you know, into it. I mean, I want you to know the 80-year-old nun has been maintaining their website. She learned HTML at 70. I mean, I didn't want to learn it at 30. I mean, I was like, she's my hero. But, you know, what is the culture? What can the culture accept, you know? We couldn't suddenly take them to a Kintara or a GetActive and have them all use it online. They're just not used to that.
What are their resources? Time, of course, that we all don't have enough of, money that we all don't have enough of, but staff time, all those things. It's important to at least, like you say, at least have it in your budget, at least have it in your job descriptions. Somebody has got to be the kind of, you know, carry the banner of technology for your organization.
We hope you enjoy this free podcast from the Nonprofit Bootcamp series. Craigslist Foundation produces events and online tools that provide knowledge, resources, and visibility to the next generation of nonprofit leaders. To learn more about Craigslist Foundation or the Nonprofit Bootcamp conferences, visit www.craigslistfoundation.org. This series is funded by the Community Technology Foundation of California, which helps underserved communities secure social justice, access, and equality through the application of information and communications technologies.
The Conversations Network is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And if you'd like us to produce new and even more exciting programs in the future, we need your help. For a tax-deductible donation of as little as $5 per month, you can support this channel and the rest of the Conversations Network. So please visit conversationsnetwork.org to become a member and help us continue to bring our programs to the world for free. The post-production audio engineer for this program was Bruce Sharp. Our website editor was Liz Evans. The series producer is Liz Evans.
My name is Eric Nee, and I hope you will join me next time for another program from the Nonprofit Bootcamp series.